Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center on Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. National Review is arguably the nation's most prominent conservative magazine. Its founder, the late William F. Buckley, created it to be the flagship of conservatism. In its pages are published the opinions of some of the nation's most gifted writers and conservative thinkers. Yet even gifted writers can succumb to ugly ideas. National Review's editor, Rich Lowry, felt compelled to fire two contributors in the span of a week. David Klinghoffer, a current Discovery Institute senior fellow and former literary editor of National Review, pointed out that these firings had a link to Darwinist racialism. David, you wrote that there are always folks out there ready to conflate conservatism with racialism and tribalism. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think both on the so-called right and on the left do that, and for different reasons. On the left, there's obviously an impulse to besmirch conservatives by pretending that they're the same thing as racialists, and in the same way that people will often try to conflate advocates of intelligent design with creationists because it serves an agenda to do that. But at the same time, from sort of the pseudo-right perspective, you have racists who really just, I think they try to wrap themselves in a respectable label and call themselves conservatives, but the truth is they're just tribalists.
We should define the terms. What do you mean by racialism, and what do you mean by tribalism?
Well, racialism basically is belief in the inherent superiority of one race over another, and Darwin, by that definition, was a racialist. To say someone who was a racist implies no pretense of kind of a scholarly justification or anything like that. Just someone who doesn't like people belong to other races is a racist. Racialism, as I use it, implies a sort of a superficial gloss of academic respectability to their racism. That's what I mean by that. Tribalism is related to it. Basically, it's the misunderstanding of conservatism that seems to think that it's all about advancing our group, our tribe, our nation, as against other nations or tribes or religions or whatever. And that's not what conservatism is about.
One of the things you assert in your blog post is that the writers fired had given in to an ugly racist impulse that periodically has to be purged from parts of the political right. Why do you think that is, that the right develops that kind of poison? Why does it need that purge? Why doesn't it stay out of it to begin with?
That's a great question. I'm not really sure. I do know that historically, the great men of the conservative movement have made a point of clearing out bad apples. William Buckley famously did that a number of times, getting rid of the John Birch Society's influence on National Review and so on. The left also has its ugly elements, but I think conservatives have been more careful about periodically getting rid of bad guys from our own side, and we police our own.
John Derbyshire, the most prominent of the writers fired, was a longtime critic of ID advocates and Darwin doubters.
Yeah, that's true.
Where do you see the link between those opinions and those that got him fired?
Well, I mean, you can trace it all the way back to Darwin himself, who was a believer in the inherent superiority of some races over others. And Derbyshire was a big Darwinist, a big critic of anything that departed from Darwinian orthodoxy, and that's why he really despised intelligent design. He was also, I should say, a very funny and erudite writer, unlike this Weisberg character who was the other guy who got kicked out. So it's
right.
A shame.
We'll deal with him specifically in a moment.
Yeah.
But with Derbyshire, what specifically got him fired?
He wrote an article for an online publication, Taki Theodorakopoulos is the publisher of that online publication. It was sort of a half-jokey, but I think basically serious rendition of what a parent should tell his children about dealing with black people. And you know, one of the things that Derbyshire said that was the most offensive was you shouldn't play the Good Samaritan with blacks. You should, and if you see a black person by the side of the road with his, you know, his car broken down, you should think twice before pulling over to help him, and you know, things like that. And basically, you know, casting blacks in general as criminals and disreputable. And first of all, obviously it's not true. And second of all, you don't say things like that. And there's a lot of kind of lighthearted racism in Taki's magazine of that kind. But someone from National Review can't get mixed up in that.
Robert Weisberg, professor emeritus from the University of Illinois, made explicit links to Darwinian racialism at this American Renaissance Conference. First, before we get into what the American Renaissance Conference is, describe the links that he made.
Rich Lowry, who's the editor of National Review, wrote a very brief explanation of why he was cutting ties with Weisberg, and he didn't really specify the reasons other than to say that Weisberg had given a speech about repackaging white nationalism at a conference held by this American Renaissance group. And he didn't really get into the content. And I think a much bigger problem was the association with American Renaissance, which is an explicitly racialist group that's in favor of racial eugenics and that kind of thing. And again, that's a very foul association for someone who's a regular writer for National Review.
I found, reading through the agenda and materials of the American Renaissance Conference, I was sickened by it, and I was just shocked that a writer for National Review would participate in such a thing. This must hit home with you, having personally worked for National Review and been the literary editor there. You must have been shocked as well when you looked at their website.
Well, I wasn't shocked, because I knew of them, and I had a vague idea of what they were about, but it wasn't until I started going through their archives and doing word searches that you come across all the heavy emphasis on eugenics. And I knew that they were racialist in the sense of white separatism and that kind of thing. I hadn't quite realized how central eugenics was to their agenda.
Yeah, it looked like a large part of their focus is with ideas of evolutionary proof of racial supremacy and a renewed emphasis on eugenics. Are those ideas limited to these kinds of fringe groups, or is there a wider problem? And is it a problem specifically for the political right, or is it wider spread than that?
I think it is a particular problem for the pseudo-right, as we discussed. And you'll find it's the same kind of emphasis on the big neo-Nazi website. It's called Stormfront. And there, too, their threads are full of talk about eugenics and evolution and racial superiority as a biological matter and all this garbage, but it's cast in a different tone. The anger is overt, and whereas with American Renaissance, they try to give it a gloss of objectivity and scholarship. The right has its own weaknesses, and the left does too. This is a problem that has plagued conservatives for a while, and we always have to be on the alert to point it out and clear it out when it's needed.
Didn't eugenics used to captivate the intellectual left?
That is true. Planned Parenthood had its origins in eugenic thinking. That is true. I'm not sure that that's true quite anymore, but you're right. And when you go back a little bit further in history, distinctions between right and left, conservatives and liberals, you don't find the same kinds of distinctions going back 100 years or more that we have today.
One of the interesting things that I find about the level of disgust people have when they see the American Renaissance Conference and what they would stand for and things of this kind is that they're advocating this kind of survival of the fittest Darwinian approach that when you challenge Darwinian theory in any way, you know, you're a bad guy or you're anti-science.
Right.
But with these guys, people see it instinctively as an immoral thing. And there's none of this hesitancy when it comes to challenging this kind of Darwinian approach to relations between human beings, because they recognize it as evil.
Well, I think that what's interesting is that were it not for us at Discovery Institute pointing out the Darwinian element in this racist subculture, then people would pretty much ignore it. So, you know, another news story going on as we're speaking is the trial of this Anders Breivik guy in Norway, you know, who was a mass murderer, and when he was first arrested after killing
all those kids on
so it came out that he developed and written a whole declaration. He had his own philosophy, and he'd written a document describing his beliefs, and it's an evil document, but it's not the work of a madman. He's got coherent though evil beliefs. And one of his beliefs is in eugenics and what he calls a Darwinian nationalism. And that element in his thinking was pretty much ignored in the media, except by us at Discovery Institute, who tried to point out that there's a pattern. And often these very bad guys, racist bad guys, turn out to have been attracted to Darwinian thinking.
I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was reading about the story, I was thinking along the same lines. I initially thought that he was some kind of a sociopathic madman who wasn't, you know, maybe thinking in gibberish or something. But then when you read about it, it looks like he said he took time to desensitize himself to the idea of killing other human beings because he was convinced that that was the right philosophy of life. I mean, it was much more of a planned, calculated, I believe in evil ideas and I'm willing to follow them through. It's extra sickening in that way.
Right. He's not a gibbering idiot. He was motivated by ideas, evil ideas, but ideas. And everyone wants to ignore that. It's sad. I was reading one of the Darwinist blog sites, P.Z. Myers, very popular Darwinist blogger, who linked to a story from another blog called Little Green Footballs, which you're probably familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a video of an interview that a Norwegian journalist had done with some kid at a Catholic college in Massachusetts. And they found this kid who was trying to defend Breivik. And so P.Z. Myers was using this as ammunition to blacken religion. Because, you know, look, here's one kid at a Catholic college in the United States who was trying to defend Breivik. And that they make a big deal of. But actually looking at what Breivik himself said is, you know, Darwinian nationalism, that they completely ignore.
Right, because religion fit the template, whereas Darwin's off limits. David, thanks so much for making the time.
David, thank you.
That concludes this edition of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture podcast, ID the Future. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support the efforts of ID the Future, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute, all rights reserved.